Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm very pleased to be joined this afternoon by Penny, who is here to give us an update on the Abundant and Resplendent Monastery Garden. Welcome, Penny.
Hi, Jen.
I have to tell you the funniest thing, Penny, which is that the cell signal has been terrible down here today for some reason. And so I am in the garden in order to get a good cell signal.
Good vibes there, Jen.
Oh, my gosh. Please tell. Penny. I don't even think in 10 minutes we could list everything that's growing in here. Just list it.
I know.
But we'll do our best.
Right. Well, you know, this year we made a decision to kind of go full bore on the garden this summer because of the sheltering in place that was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
because of uncertainties about the food supply during the epidemic. And so we decided that it would be good to try to grow more of our own food. And
mm-hmm.
after all, we're not going anywhere. We're all around, right? So
exactly.
we're available
mm-hmm.
to
yep.
work. And so we often have had in the past a rather small summer garden because
mm-hmm.
it's so dry in the summer. But
mm-hmm.
then a number of years ago, because of the generosity of Sangha, we were able to bring in these huge water tanks, which fill up in the rain. And
yes.
so for the last couple of summers, we really have had thousands of gallons of water available. And so this year, we really decided to go for it and to try to grow some foods that are bulkier, you know, are heavier foods than
mm-hmm.
Usually grow, just to provide some calories and foods we like squashes and potatoes and you'll have to update me on where we are with the sweet potatoes. Like we've been hoping to start sweet
Absolutely.
Potatoes and started a whole new bed for them. So where do we stand on those,
yep.
Jen?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because folks will see when the newsletter comes out this month, we took a photo of one. Actually, you were there when we did it. So, I mean, unbeknownst, I think, to either of us before we were looking at that, how sweet potatoes grow, but it's very different than potatoes. And so you told me about starting them. You take an actual whole sweet potato and put it basically halfway in a thing of water, and then it starts to grow. Ours grew like crazy immediately. And so they grow, I guess what they're called is slips, right? So the...
Right.
They grow these sort of roots below, and then the roots start to grow these leaves that come up through the top and come out the top, you know, through the water. And I'd say we probably have, I don't know, at least 7-8 slips at this point
oh.
so far.
Oh.
And tons more on the way, it looks
yeah.
like.
So
yeah.
Google has helped us a lot.
It has. It really, we, yes.
So we'll have to Google how best to actually put them in the bed, but we created a bed just for them.
Yeah.
And we planted a lot. We have some nice summer squashes growing, and then we have quite a variety of winter squashes that mostly have started. And we're also growing melons this year. We're trying to. And I noticed today we have a variety of little sort of small watermelon and a variety of small cantaloupe, and I noticed today they're both just now emerging. And then we're growing lots of beans.
Yes.
The cook at one point said, the kitchen manager said, all the beans you can grow. And so we took her at her word.
Yeah.
So we're growing beans to be eaten fresh and also beans for soups and things we can dry. And then we're at the end of our, really kind of coming to the end of our pea season, but we've had amazing snap peas, and we have artichokes. And we've just the garden has been very, very productive, and a lot of work that we've put in over the years, you know, to store water and create swales and do cover cropping and that kind of thing, I think is paying off.
I agree. Yeah, it really feels that way. And, you know, because also the rhythm of things have changed, you know, we're able to be out here more in the garden. So
yep.
really there's more human power available to do it. Even though people aren't here to join us, which is, you know, one of the things that is hard, because this would be, it's such a lovely time for people to be at the monastery. You know, often visiting monks would be here in
yep.
fairly large numbers to assist with all this, but we've been somehow miraculously keeping up. And I will tell you that the food that's coming onto the table is we had the most exquisite stir fry today for lunch featuring those peas, those snap peas. Oh my goodness, they are so good. And the artichokes, you know, I mean, I'm looking at quite a number still that are on the stalk. And we've had so many artichokes, and it's just.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the other thing for me, speaking for myself, is sheltering in place and being, you know, pretty much only able to see people on screens and Zoom calls and things, other than the monks whom I see in the garden as we keep our distance. I find it very nourishing, to be separated like this and to be somewhat confined, to be able to be in a place that's open and is growing and is beautiful, and also, in the midst of a pandemic, to be involved in growth and life and, nurturing and seeding and transplanting. I mean, it's such an affirmation that I find it immensely heartening.
Yeah, really, really agreed. I'm really noticing the same thing with the screens and wanting to just stand up and look away from the screen and look at the sky and look at the trees and be out here with the weed eater and the shovels and the, And, you know, Penny, I've been seeing here and there and hearing from people that a lot of people are turning towards this kind of thing, even in really creative ways. You know, people who are living in more urban places are still doing things like window gardens. And just because of that same thing, I project, wanting to really be in touch with that which is really alive.
Yes. In fact, it was funny. I was watching a permaculture workshop that I was part of right after we started sheltering in place, and they said, you know, we can't find seeds anywhere. So I got online and got the last of a few seeds, and, you know, you went scampering out to get some compost. And, and in fact, the gardening has become so popular that the kind of seed sources we have often used were selling out. Plus, they were having to somewhat shut down operations, too. So, there's been a real surge to gardening, and I think for the same reasons that we started, which is some concern about food, but as long as we're home, let's grow our own food, and let's have that experience of digging in the dirt and watching things grow, and what that does for the spirit.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've talked any number of groups at the monastery where, you know, folks have been out in the garden and the gardener asks us, okay, will you plant some lettuces, right? So you take these seeds that you need a pair of tweezers to pick up. I mean, they're so tiny, your finger can't even really get them. And you put them in this little hole and then you water them and you think, I mean, what is that microscopic thing going to do? And there's this beautiful head of red leaf lettuce, you know, whatever period of time later. And then this other seed that looks identical to it grows a watermelon. it's remarkable.
And then we also have the advantage of all the volunteers. So we have all these California poppies and red poppies and and any number of weeds that I can't even identify that the bees are just so happy with. And we have pansies and we have lavenders and roses and so that's just a joy too, the color. I don't think we've ever had quite so many flowers, and this year we kind of decided to go for it in terms of flowers too. And you know, the around the gate there are these pansies as you enter from the parking lot, and they just feel like as you approach the gate, you just feel like you're being smiled at. You know, like, welcome.
Exactly. Truly, the challenge is, you know, in those, when the monastery wall comes out, you know, which six photos are we going to, do here? Because there's just so much beauty.
And we're so fortunate to just have this amazing piece of property.
We really are.
And all the years that people have worked at, you know, working the soil and growing and getting to know what grows here. And so there's a, you know, there's kind of a lineage of, and behind that garden too, that you can that I sense when we're in it, that this is the monastery garden, and it has supported the monastery in many ways, and the monastery has supported it for years and years and years, and it's very exciting.
Yeah, that's a really beautiful image, Penny, because I just, that really puts words to something that I've been looking at, which is that, you know, it's so, we so wish that people could be here at this beautiful time of year, but there's a way in which everybody is here, and that all that's come before is supporting the community who is here, and hopefully the community who is here, there's a sense for us anyway that we're sort of holding down the fort, if you will, for the Sangha, and that the garden is such a perfect example of not only are we growing so much of our own food, but the more we're growing, the less we need to buy at the grocery store, which is a great boon for uncertain financial times.
Yeah.
So it just all feels like it works so beautifully.
It was one of the motivations, I think, you know, considering
that. Yes, exactly.
And also that food will become more expensive, which it has been. So it saves some money for us and also, you know, allows us to be contributing to
exactly.
the production of the most essential thing rather than just being a consumer.
Yes, yes, yeah, well put. So, Penny, we're at the top of the hour. Was there anything else you wanted to add in before we end?
Only that I just have to say every time I walk into the garden, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know,
yeah,
thank you to the garden, thank you to the monastery, thank you for people who you know, provided the funds for those water tanks that have changed everything. And, you know, it's just it's a great place to just sort of be awash in gratitude.
Yeah, well, good word. And that reminds me, I did want to thank you for that. Circle back on the water tanks. Yes, exactly. We just had an extraordinary rain, which is very unusual for us at this point in the season. And we had our water steward out there just doing everything she could to make sure we just filled up every single little bit last. So we've got our full 25,000 gallons of water stored on the property right now. So we're ready. We are ready. Yeah.
Thanks, Jen.
And Penny, a huge thank you to the person who has dedicated, I'm not even sure how many years now, to this extraordinary garden, which there's absolutely no way this garden, well, I don't even think it would exist, let alone look how it looks without that exquisite stewardship. So deep, deep gesho.
Well, I am very grateful also.
Yeah.
To be able to do
all right. Well, yep, to be able to participate in that way.
Yep.
Thank you, Penny. Thanks for being
thank
with
you,
us this afternoon. All right. Take good care. Bye-bye. And Michael, we'll turn it over to you and Ashwini.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Penny. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Ashwini. Welcome, Ashwini.
Hey, Michael.
Hi. You know, I was picturing myself right there in the garden as they were talking. It was great to bring back the memories.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I just think, as Jen said, you can conjure up how abundant and beautiful and bountiful it is.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And to have all that water stored ready for the dry months ahead to keep it all alive and fertile.
And I love what Penny said about the lineage of the garden.
Yes.
It's a growing, living part of the whole of the monastery, and everyone who's been there has had a hand in it. You know? It's a beautiful Sangha embodiment.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going there right now, having their own memories of being in the garden. Yes. And I have announcements.
Great.
Join Sangha this Sunday, May 23rd, for an exploration of how we practice offering the blessings of love and respect to all. Prospective participants are invited to be open to playfulness and the unexpected at this virtual workshop.
That's going to be fun.
Yes, it is.
You're into it.
Yeah. Oh, good. And I saw an email came out today about it, so that's great. Taking care of our bodies and minds seems more crucial than ever while we ride out the current crisis. An at-home gentle yoga series provides support in cultivating and or strengthening a regular practice of stewarding the body. The yoga sessions, which run from May 22nd to June 12th, incorporate themes from the year-long retreat and other elements of awareness practice. And a few reminders for our conversation today. If you'd like to talk with Ashwini, you can press star 6 and then 1 to make guest show and get in the queue. And a reminder to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes. Okay, Ashwini, I think we are ready here.
Good.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? You
Hi,
are un-
Laura.
There you are. Hey, Laura.
Double muted.
Hey, Laura.
Hello.
So what are you looking at?
When I heard that you're unmuted, I was, ego was not happy because I have some content I'm looking at, and it dropped in to call in, and had the feeling I would get emotional, yeah, because I've been dating someone for a while now, and yes, found out yesterday that that they've been, you know, like maintaining like the profile on an online dating app, and just working with that.
Sorry, Laura, maybe I'm not tracking. So you have been dating someone for a while, and what did you find out yesterday?
That they've been maintaining a profile on an online dating app.
So they are maintaining a profile on an online dating app. And so you've been looking at that, and what have you seen so far? I mean, yes, you're getting emotional. Perhaps you want to process that a little?
Yeah.
What do you feel?
It feels painful.
It's painful.
Like feel hurt.
Hurt.
And I think like fear about what it will mean.
Fear about what it will mean.
Yeah, I think kind of like a fear of like I'm not gonna be able to handle however this plays out, you know. And like fear of making the wrong decision too. Like should I stay with this person or not? And I don't know, I was just recording about it, and like I don't know, there's also like there's the emotion, but there's also like this kind of inner sense of like okayness, like just having this sense of like I can kind of see like all the places where conditioning kind of wants to crowd in, of like the fears and the self-hate stuff and the, you know, and I was doing a junior recording, and it was like what came in on the left hand was like, you know, it's like just trusting a life gonna like show me whatever I need to see in this, like give me whatever I need in this, like,
Yeah. So it sounds like something challenging happened. There was an identification, but there was also tremendous presence in being able to pick up the practice tool and do the two-handed recording and get in touch with what this person is going through as a result of that challenge in the environment. And even though there's a whole bunch of stuff that's coming up for her, there is also that ability to know that this is a life of workshop. I'm going to be able to see what I need to see through this experience, and I am going to be okay, however difficult this is going to be.
Yeah.
It's magnificent, yeah. Right, Laura? That we can go through something with such a level of awareness. Awareness practice doesn't mean we're not going to feel bad, or we're not going to experience loss or grief or love or whatever it is that we're feeling. But that no matter what we experience, it's in the context of it's all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was kind of one of the most reassuring things that came in from the mentor of okay, hadn't realized it was that place of I'm going to be with you. It's going to be okay. I kind of hadn't realized that part of the fear is just, I can't handle this. I'm not going to be able to handle it,
mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. We're being told about what we can't do, what we're not going to be able to do. There's that constant negation, right? As opposed to, well, with the mentor, I have enough practice under my belt to be able to experience whatever it is that I'm going through, because I'm going through it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what's dropping in right now is I've had the experience when I'm in a difficult place with chronic pain stuff that the real suffering place is when I'm going out into the future. This place where if I just stay right here, I'm always okay right here. And I feel like it's that same thing. As soon as I go out to be what's going to happen, that's kind of where the suffering starts.
Mm-hmm. And that's such a profound insight, right? So on two levels, that you've had a process with another difficult content in your life of realizing how suffering is caused for you, is to listen to a voice that takes you away from the moment in which you can be with whatever is going on and frighten you about a possibility that doesn't exist in the now. And so to realize that it's the same thing that's happening, and I know where that goes, how that ends. It ends in a suffering place, and I don't have to give it any attention. Because when I'm here with Laura, or I'm here with the situation, it's actually fine. I don't have to listen to fear-mongering voices about predicting the future, because they don't know what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. That's helpful to remember.
Right? Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. All these wild predictions that are based on nothing.
Yeah.
They don't know.
Yeah.
You don't know. No one knows.
Yeah. Well, thank you. It's very helpful to be able to process that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, and then to really, sit with what drops in as the next step, right? Maybe you ask the person you're with why are they doing that, right? There's a way in which you are in a relationship, and you could have an honest communication with someone and say, hey, I noticed this. What's up with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily lead to the conclusion of this is over, or whatever it is that the voices are telling you it means to have discovered this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Yeah. We don't want to cede control to ego over who we're left alone with, right? Because what it's gunning for is your only relationship is going to be with it.
Yeah, and I think that there, because I have had an initial conversation with him about it, I think there is kind of a duality of like, okay, I can either sort of accept this and accept that this is something that he's been doing and, you know, potentially not from a very conscious place and, you know, something that he's going to work with or whatever. It's like, or I have to like shut him out, you know, and
two bad choices.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it seems like you're doing you're taking the step that is available for you to take her at having registered this piece of information.
Oh, you blipped out just a little bit, Ashwini. Could you say that again?
Oh, just that you're working with it based on what's available.
Yeah.
And so then to record a little bit, are those the only two choices? If you don't give the conversation over, the attention over to the conversation, you recognize those are two bad choices. So if you weren't being, if your next step is not dictated by those two choices, what becomes possible for you? You can explore that. You can record about it, and life will tell you, right?
Yeah.
We just don't have to do what the voices tell us to do. We can recognize that that's what the voices are telling us and then go record and work out what life is telling us to do, if anything.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I hadn't seen it as the two bad choices, but that very much rings true.
Yes, exactly. Right? Exactly. What it means, what it means about the future, what your choices are now, all with, let's maximize her suffering and get her alone with me. It's all ego's trying to do, right?
Yeah.
Have your life.
Yeah. Yep.
All right.
Thank you.
Keep us posted. Thanks, Laura.
Okay.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. And Ashwini, I find that concept of the two bad choices just incredibly helpful. And I think it was last year or the year before on the morning show when someone brought that up, and I remember the moment, I remember where I was, and it's not just a duality that has these two sides, it's two bad sides. So it's just incredibly helpful.
That is very helpful, because in a duality, if we look at the duality hard enough, it's always two bad choices, because part of what the duality is about is to make me wrong or make me feel bad, right? The suffering is maintained.
Yes, yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have another caller here.
Okay.
Hi, Ashwini. Hi, Ashwini. Hey, Michael. My name is Bob from San Diego.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey. Good evening. And glad to be on. I am calling because over the past maybe month or so, I've realized just how much I'm trapped in fear of doing, really moving ahead with any kind of big decisions in my life. Which involved, you know, figuring out my finances, my job, my relationship with my girlfriend. And it's when I get close to any, when I start to move towards any of these, I just have this feeling of aversion and fear, and I turn away to one kind of a distraction or another.
And so, Bob, I'm trying to understand what you're saying. Are you seeing it as you're being talked into it, right? Rather than, so I'm experiencing this fear. Are you aware that there's a conversation that you're listening to that produces that sensation for you, that you're being talked
to? You know, it's funny, I'm not. And I just experience the physicality of it. but I've looked. I try to recreate it afterwards. Say, what was going on, and what was I being talked into? But it's not much there. It's really just this aversion, like you were walking down the street and saw some horrible accident. It's that just physical level.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a recording and listening practice, Bob?
I do. After going to the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, I had a very strong one, and it's kind of tapered off, but I do have a little bit of a practice about it.
Because it would be very helpful to really explore what you're feeling, right? So it sounds like you're not hearing voices, but fear is very visible, and the experience you have is a sense of aversion. I don't want to go there. And so it can be easily maintained, right? Because you have no information about why you're afraid, why you're avoiding this, how this is done to you. You're just at the mercy of something that is not well understood, because it controls you in that obscure way, right? And the story is, it's a big decision. Don't go there. I think it's in our book, Transcending Resistance, that that's the way ego maintains itself, right? When you approach any boundary which threatens its control over you, it produces all these sensations, and it has trained us like a Pavlov's dog to not cross that line, right? And so, oh my God, I can't deal with this. I can't go there, because I'm not going to be able to stand whatever it is that I'm going to have to confront. And we don't.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's funny. I'm even experiencing it right now. Because if I do this, right, if I go forward with it, then I'm going to have to confront that level of it. So even now, it's like, oh, get off the phone kind of feeling.
Well, and so part of what we, what we do in a practice way is for us to pick up the recorder and just talk from where you are right now. Right? Oh, my God, sensations in my body. I don't want to confront it. I feel like, and you keep talking about that so that that person is able to get in touch with what it is that they're really afraid of. I won't stand. And you keep talking till you get to that place of, is it that you feel inadequate, that you can't do it alone, that it's too, the sensations, you can't stand the sensations, right? You get interested in exploring and letting that person who's caught in that place articulate what is going on for them. And then you listen to that, because the person who listens to it is not the person having the experience. And so you, from a disidentified perspective, can hear what that person might need in terms of encouragement or support that would assist them, not to fix the issue, not to fix themselves, but just simply what's going on for them, that they can be accepted and reassured.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I could see doing that.
And
the power that would have.
Yeah, and it's wherever you are, right? So you don't have to go to the having to confront these decisions. Wherever you are is the place to start the recording.
Okay.
I feel tremendous resistance, or I feel tremendous fear, or I feel completely sad, or I don't want to do that. I have to get off the phone. Wherever you are is the place to start. Because that takes away a huge weapon of ego, which is, it's this huge complex thing that I have to somehow go and do an archaeological dig around.
Right.
No, I'm just looking at what's coming up for me in this moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and when I start to be, and you're right about the archaeological dig, not only about what's going on, but about these decisions, all seem to be interrelated, and then it's just overwhelming and too much, and
it's like a big sign that says do not enter, because and so you won't enter, and you have no idea what's actually behind the door or behind the sign, because if you wandered into that place, you'd probably find it quite innocuous. But it's the fact that you have to get behind the sign, right?
Yeah, the sign the ego is putting up just to keep itself going.
Keep you out.
Yeah.
And keep you out. And keep you from being free.
Oh, right. Right.
Right? And I don't know if you were on the workshop this Sunday, right? One of the recordings we trained to make is to assist ourselves to make a recording for the person who's going to approach that sign. How would it be encouraging? How would it be reassuring? What would they want to hear as they're approaching that? What would they like to hear while they're looking at it, right? And you make that recording ahead of time and then listen to it while you're doing it.
Oh,
that's
yeah, great.
To
I
be
wasn't...
with a person. Yeah, go ahead, sorry.
No, sorry, go ahead.
Well, and that's a way to have a company that is helpful while you're approaching a task where the conversation is punitive otherwise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was on the call on Sunday, this last Sunday, and I signed up for the one this coming Sunday. And I did a much smaller task, but you're right, I could do the exact same thing for one of these.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, there's so many ways with which you could work with that, right? What you're feeling now, what the person feels when they approach this, and what's going on for them, so you could get clear about that. What would assist them? You can make a recording about that, right? And
what that does
is disidentify from the fear, right? Doesn't stop
it. you're right. I think the first recording I need to make is for the person who's afraid to practice with it. Just get started there and then move on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you so much, Ashwini and Michael. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks, Bob. You take care and keep us posted.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Bob. And Ashwini, I was really appreciating that idea of just begin where I am, you know, record what's going on with me right now. I've heard us talk about that a lot as the portal to whatever follows.
Mm-hmm. Because we are in the process we need to be getting, we need to have our attention out of, right? And that's the process we cannot see, which is why we record about it, because then you can see it as opposed to be in it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, the process that I can't see is the one that I'm in. And Ashwini, we are going to break and hear from our Zen Awareness Coaching Program, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
Very good. Thanks, Michael.
You're welcome.
Zen Awareness Coaching supports us to look at the content of our lives through the lens of process. Through the 6 weekly sessions, we use content such as relationships, career, money, health, even spiritual practice itself, and get support for looking at it through the eyes of not what, but how. We use the tools of recording and listening, process mapping, and weekly practice commitments to see how we suffer so we can drop that and support the human to live in unconditional love and acceptance. People say that the structure and one-to-one support that coaching offers makes a huge difference in their lives. If you've ever attended a There Is Nothing Wrong With You retreat and would like to work with a Zen Awareness Coach, email zenawarenesscoach@livingcompassion.org. Let Zen Awareness Coaching provide the support and structure for living in the how of presence.
Welcome back to Open Air. And Ashwini, we have more callers here.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Art. Hi, everybody.
Hey, Art.
Hi, Art.
Hey, thanks so much. I'm happy to be here. And I've been consistently recording and listening every day for a really long time. I've been away from Sangha a lot lately, except for I've been listening to recordings of the shows and things like that. I do miss being in the year-long retreat. It's been a long time since I've done that. But I just remembered that the show was on tonight, so I figured, well, I better, you know, it would be, I'm sure it'd be helpful to listen in. And of course, whenever I, you know, when I've got the habit of whenever I enlist listening to the live show to push the, you know, star six. And so here I am.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it dropped in and you followed the impulse to participate.
Yep.
And here you are.
Yep.
Uh-huh. Are you saying something about that, Art?
Well, I'm noticing that all of a sudden I'm experiencing being here.
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So
that it's a very different experience to be participating live than just listening to your recordings, perhaps.
Very much so.
Uh-huh. Yep. And
yeah.
And what do you see as the difference?
Oh, I see it as I get pulled out of all the stories that are playing in my head.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So do you have the experience that when you're listening to recordings, you're also listening to stories in your head? So that's what the difference is?
That's interesting. I have what I do when I'm listening to yes, to recordings, a lot of it definitely the yes, there's a I'm working on a sewing machine right now, and so it's kind of similar in that the like when I guess my experience it's similar in that I think it's oh, I'm kind of forcing it now. Well, I can. What I'm doing when I'm listening, it seems like when I'm listening to the recordings, to the recorded shows, it's more about noticing insights about how much what a wonderful experience it is to be in this here now, and mm-hmm. And actually when I'm participating in the live show, it isn't about hearing about insights, it's actually experiencing, being in this here now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the quality of the experience is different. And so
yeah.
We train to do all of it, right? Which sort of brings us back to why we practice with different offerings, right? Sometimes we record, sometimes we listen, sometimes we call in, sometimes we go on retreat. Because the training is so multifaceted, right? Because if we only do one thing, then we're only training in that.
Yep. Yeah.
And we want to train to be completely here and available for all experiences in life, right?
Right.
Not just one experience.
Yeah.
So we have the ability to have all experiences.
Yep. Okay, well, I laughed just because it's a good prompting, I think, to do, especially now that that I'm in transition between, well, especially now, any now that I, you know, that I am, you know, I'm worth it, you know, that I I'm worth. Practicing to to get to know the person that's here.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, that's an interesting connection, right? That the reason that you're not allowed to participate is that you're not somehow worth it, that all of you can't be exercised all the time and only some parts of you need get any airtime. And so to recognize that it's not about being worthy. It's just about expressing all that life force that is you,
yep.
That comes through you in different ways.
Yep. And so often it gets labeled disassociation.
A lack of participation gets labeled disassociation, which is interesting, right? Because then it puts an ego spin on not taking it personally.
Could you say more about that?
Well, we often say in practice, don't take it personally, right? That nothing is personal. Taking it personally makes it all about me, the ego, me. But if you don't engage in your life and with all the life force and all of the capabilities that the life force has, then it's non-engagement. It's not dissociation, right?
Right. Yes. And to the extent that there's non-engagement, that's in direct proportion to the experience of ego, I suppose.
Yeah, we're not living.
Yeah.
We're not alive, wholly alive.
Yeah.
We're only partially allowed to participate. Only some aspects of us are allowed to be there.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Well, thank you so much, and I'm looking
forward
to. Well,
thanks, Art. And you know that the year long is still open for registration, and it's prorated. So if you feel like participating in the show, and you can, write into the registration office, and we'll sign you up.
Okay, that sounds like a great idea. Thank you.
All right. All right. Take care.
Good night. Thank
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye bye.
Thanks for joining us, Art, and. Yeah, I find the present moment very compelling also, Ashwini, and it's great to live here and express everything that there is to express here.
Mm-hmm. That comes through.
Yes, 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 everything that comes through. And we have another caller here.
Hey.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi there, it's Sarah in San Carlos.
Hi, Sarah.
Can you hear me okay? Hello. Hi, Michael. Hi, Ashwini.
Hey, Sarah.
Yeah, I'm calling in to say thank you for that retreat on Sunday. It was phenomenal, and I've just been having a lot of fun applying it to different tasks and, and it really, what it feels like is sort of this tilt into love with each time. Like it's this opportunity to take something that, you know, ego says is so difficult and unpleasant and a drag, you know, and just take a few moments before starting to see it as sort of an opportunity. And I applied it to work, and I was just so blown away by how much easier the task was. And my colleagues said they just weren't expecting the product quite as quickly as I delivered it, and it was so effortless to do. And I really just appreciate what, you know, the retreat, but also all the people that called in with examples, you know, because it was so helpful to have those specifics to see the opportunity that there is.
Mm-hmm. So, Sarah, I project that everybody's on the call today or tonight, might have been on the Sunday workshop, but just in case they weren't, the tool that we were looking at yesterday, was it just yesterday? Oh, on Sunday, was simply that if there's a task that you feel resistant to, then how about make a recording for the person who's going to do that task and to make the recording while doing the task so that it's available when you do the task again. And so it's a brilliant way to short-circuit resistance, right? Because ego says, I don't want to, or it's too hard, or I don't want to do this, or whatever else. And as you said, the recording is a tilt into love because we switch out of resistance into love for the person who's going to do the task and make the recording from love. And so now we're in love approaching the task rather than an ego approaching the task. And it really makes the whole thing effortless because we don't even have to go up against the resistance because that's not what we're doing. We're just switching our attention to a different process.
Yep, Yep. And there's, and you don't realize until you do it how much energy is being siphoned off by the ego process that's trying to undermine what you're doing, mm-hmm. and how much, how much there is. And it just occurred to me, like, wow, if this, even if this went on for years, you know, this pandemic, there would be all these opportunities to sort of experience some of these tasks for the first time. They'd be all new. It's not this, you know, this, like, I think the fear is, oh, the boredom, but there wouldn't be if everything was an opportunity to be with the person having the experience.
Mm-hmm. That's so wonderfully stated, right, Sarah, because it's a recognition that what this pandemic has done is reduce choice and variability and novelty, and it's the same old, same mm-hmm. old, same old over and over and over again. But when we switch it up and realize that if everything is an opportunity for love, then I actually have not experienced this task before, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
so I get to use this time to be able to retrain myself out of resistance and train myself in tilting from love. And that's such a wholly different approach to life. And it was a tangential thought. So if there was a response, I'll hold on to that. You say.
Oh, okay. Well, just the process is just so playful. I mean, the way, and I can't remember how, when you did that visualization at the beginning, I can't remember your exact wording, but there's this sense of, like, actually, I don't know, I don't even know how to articulate it, when you're just in, you're there and you're present and you're watching and you're trying, there is an interaction that goes on between you and the thing that you're working with.
Mm,
and
yeah.
It's there's a creativity and there's something just very interesting there. So it's so ridiculous for ego to say this is this mundane, repetitive task, because
mm-hmm.
it's the opposite of that. It's this life-giving, generative, you know, process. And
yes.
I think, yeah.
Life-giving and generative. I think the ingredient is called love mischief.
Yeah, that's right. That's the way you, yeah. Yes, yes,
right?
Yes.
That's what it
yeah.
is. That when we're here in life, that's our experience. It's creative, generative, together. There's a sense of presence and energy that has that quality. And it's ridiculous that ego says it's different, and that was my tangential observation, is that the only thing that is repetitive is what the conditioned voices say. They say the same thing over and over again. No wonder we feel bored.
Yeah, yeah. That's such a good point.
But
if that's where your attention is, you are having the same experience over and over.
That's exactly
yeah.
right. We're experiencing the ego yeah. over and over and over again, which is why when we're here in that love mischief experience, it doesn't feel like that, because in the moment we're experiencing life, which is always changing and interesting and different flavors, and all kinds of things are happening if we're there for it.
Yeah.
We can't
yeah.
be bored. Because nothing's the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you. That was really just an amazing retreat. And it just, yeah. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your participation, Sarah.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha.
Gotcha.
Thanks for joining us, Sarah. And I love that quote, too, about what love mischief will we get up to today. Ashwini, that's a great
yeah.
quote. Yes. And we have another caller here. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini and Michael. This is Justin up in Bear Valley.
Oh, hey, Justin.
Hey, Justin.
Hey. Hey, I wanted to call back. And a couple weeks ago, I talked with you, Ashwini, about attention and
mm-hmm.
kind of where we have our attention off the cushion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, breakfast, I recall.
There was breakfast and eggs, yes. anyways, yeah, so one of the things I heard with the guidance was to say out loud what I'm doing, you know, as I'm going mm-hmm. through the task. So mm-hmm. I gave that a go, and what I saw was tremendous resistance to that. And yeah, and it just dropped in, like, before I called into open air. Like, well, yeah, let me pause there. Are you tracking so far?
There's tremendous resistance to following the guidance to talk out loud.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And I think part of it was because I tried it, and ego deemed me terrible at it, because I would say what I was doing for like 10 or 15 seconds, and then I would just like stop talking, which is kind of scary without realizing it, because, you know, obviously I'm in conditioned mind, and it was like sobering. But anyways, what dropped in like before I called in was like, well, also like meditation was really hard for me when I started, and 10 minutes was grueling, and I worked my way up to that. And, you know, changing postures was really hard until I did it, and then now it's comfortable. So I guess, yeah, just seeing that insight that, you know, it is hard until it's like not.
Yeah, well, I think we were looking at it on the morning show recently, right, that when we do something that causes the ego to be under scrutiny or challenges the ego, then it mm-hmm. really doesn't like it, right? We are experiencing the discomfort of ego under the microscope, and it's going to do everything it can possibly can do in order to make it so uncomfortable that you quit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so insight is, okay, that's what I want to see, right? Because the objective is not to have a fabulous meditation, or the objective is I want to encounter anything that that I'm not free from in order to be free.
Right, right. So it's like those hardest places is where we learn the most about, well, how we're being operated by ego, right? Which
right.
is mm-hmm. where the freedom exactly. lies.
Yes, and so you keep doing it. You keep doing it because you get to see how resistance operates for you, and how you're controlled around not being able to expose the ego. Right?
Right.
When you were talking out loud, it says, nope, you can't do this. This is, you're terrible at it. And so you've got to stop. And you find yourself stopping, and it's scary. So there's the motivation to keep going, just like you did in meditation and in other places, right?
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to get shut down by the fact that that ego is resistant to this. I want to keep going, because as we were looking at the show in this morning, this is what I want. I want to be here. I want to have my attention here, off the cushion and on the cushion. And so I'm going to see everything that stops me from having attention here. And I'm going to persist, no matter how uncomfortable ego is.
Yeah. No, yeah. That's really inspiring to hear. And it makes it like ego wants to make it such about the content, like, you know, talking out loud, like, oh, that's weird. What, you know, what are you getting out of that and all this? But I guess it's not about, you know, it's not even really about, I don't know, talking out loud or meditating, but it's about, gosh, and I just had it, but now it's kind of slipping. It's about seeing the process and seeing the resistance come up. Yeah.
Right. And I would project, I don't know how much you persisted in it, but as you start to talk, You stop talking from the resistance, and you start talking in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But we have to move through that little bit of self-consciousness or whatever conditioning comes up
mm-hmm.
to really get into the moment. And now you might have an amazing of everything that you're noticing in the moment. And now you're in the moment, because you cannot be talking from the moment if your attention is not 100% here. And so now it becomes a delightful experience to talk about everything that you're seeing, and because life is seeing, and life is excited about what it's seeing.
Right, 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 right. It's like awareness is always aware. We're just, you know, mm-hmm. trying to align with that, right? Or, you know.
That's right.
Yeah.
And,
okay,
and
yeah.
The master stroke, right, Justin? You get comfortable in a certain place, and now you change that in order not to be comfortable anymore. Because it's where we're comfortable that ego has can potentially lull us into unconsciousness, right? And so now you have to practice like the Buddha in the forest as well as in the palace.
Oh, I like that. Yeah. Well, that's great. That's very inspiring. That's very inspiring to hear, and that makes me really want to go do some talking out loud, whether it's in the recorder or just, you know.
Yeah, or if we want to frame it, have your attention in this year now and let this year now have the recorder.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There you go. Okay, well, thank you very much, Gasha. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Justin.
You're welcome. Thanks for joining us, Justin. And Ashwini, we have time for at least one more caller here.
Wonderful.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Ashwini. Hey, Michael. It's Ann calling from the Bay Area, and I am so happy to be here.
Hi, Ann.
Hey, Ann. We're happy you're here, too.
Hey. So it's interesting that I had called in with something to talk about, and it felt like there was a theme tonight of, you know, ego presenting two choices that are both really bad. So A, you lose, B, you lose.
Yes.
Because I haven't been able to listen to the morning call live lately because my schedule changed, and so I wanted to call in and talk about something I'm seeing in regards to that, and that, you know, what is the choice that ego presents to you, and you know, it's nothing new, but I just feel like I'm seeing it for the first time and so amazed by it.
Then it's absolutely new, Anne.
Yeah, exactly. It's absolutely new. And that's the choice of it's either all or nothing. So you either have to, you know, I don't know, do an hour and a half doing yoga or spend an hour working on recording and listening or doing the homework or whatever it is, you know, you've got to do it in such a way that it's never going to work, so just don't do it.
Yeah. All or nothing.
Yeah.
It's not sufficient that you could spend 5 minutes doing a recording because that doesn't count if it's not an entire hour of recording. So if you can't devote an entire hour of recording, you might as well not record.
Right, exactly. And so, of course, the setup is let's create a standard you can't meet. I mean, again, nothing new, but let's create a standard you can't meet to set you up to basically stop practicing.
Yes, perfect. For you to quit, right? Just keep quitting on everything in your life.
Say again?
Well, just quit on everything in your life.
Right. Yeah, I remember a yoga teacher once saying to me, personally, but to a class, you know, okay, let's say you only have 5 minutes for yoga. And it blew my mind. I'm like, 5 minutes? You mean, it never occurred to me to spend just 5 minutes doing yoga. It was like, what a concept.
Yeah.
You know, and to take it in small bites, it's like, wow, that's possible.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and often when we do it, when we get into it, when we get past it, because it's a form of resistance, right, Anne, I can't do this because I don't have sufficient time to do this, and therefore let's not do it, is a version of I don't want to, I don't feel like it, meaning I can't, right? I'm not allowed to do this thing that I actually want to do, that I would enjoy doing, that I choose to do. And so that's a sure way to get us not to start. But if you start with a small increment, however long it is, and you've switched from resistance to presence, then life will determine the length of time you have to do it. You might do it one down dog and go, great, feel good, ready to do my next task. Or, I have this insight and I could keep recording and you can do that. But you're not in the process of I can't. You're in the process of I'm here.
Yes, that's so helpful to see. What basically happens is how something we want to do gets hijacked by ego into something that we can't do. But what I fail to see is it's because of a fake standard that's been set up that I can't do it, that has nothing to do with now.
That's right, because if you had, if it was occurring for you, occurring to you to do it, and you had a little bit of time to do it, that's the impulse that you could follow. Instead, it's overridden
yes.
by, well, that's just too small an increment of investment, and so it's not worth investing.
Yeah, yes, exactly. And who says that? Yeah, and I had never really seen it as resistance. That's really helpful, too. Well, one of the things somebody said on the morning call that I really related to is all these things the practitioner does, but they don't get credit for that. You know, that doesn't count.
Yeah.
Which feels like it's in the same vein, that there's these huge, you have to meet these certain, you know, conditioning standards are out there to be, basically, to be not met, right? It can
yeah.
never be
well,
met, and then nothing else counts.
Yeah. Well, and then it reinforces whatever the ego identity is of, I really want to, but I can't, whatever that image is, right? Feeling inadequate or feeling
yeah.
worthless or feeling bad or feeling not in control or impotent or whatever it is that gets
right.
reinforced. Because the whole setup is just to simply maintain what you cannot do and who you're not, not to assist you to do what you want to do and be the person you are.
Yes, and the what came up for me as you were reflecting is that when that whole thing happens is to step back and say, well, how can I? You know, because the whole conversation is really you can't. You can't because of X, Y, and Z. Well, I want to, so how can I?
And what can I do? What can
yes.
I do? How much can I do?
Yeah. Yeah, it's just amazing to me how it just, that's this. It's just a really helpful process to catch on to.
Yes, and as we were saying on the show this morning, what it says has nothing to do with what we want, right? We're not even conscious.
Yes.
It's not an awareness that I actually want to do this. I'm
really
talking about some standard or time or what I've got to do instead, and so it's so well couched that it's not visible to us. What
yes.
that how we're being controlled around a choice.
Yes, yes, yeah. I thought that was so helpful, that whole conversation around, I think it was around the getting up to meditate with the virtual meditation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just so helpful to see. So I'm very grateful for the opportunity to see and the structures in place to allow us to see. And like you said, it's always new, which is a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because it pierces some other veil, and so our perspective
yeah.
shifts.
Yes, yes, it's like seeing the same scene from a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or maybe it's
the hunt,
no,
the different guises
of
ego. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So it's very helpful. So I'm very appreciative, and it's just so amazing to me how. You know, when each person shares, I'm just so right there going, yes, I just so see that, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We're all
yeah.
one, in other words.
We're all one.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you so much.
Thanks, Anne.
Thanks for joining us, Anne. And Ashwini, we are at the top of the hour here.
Well, when you're having fun.
Time flies when you're having fun, and I've had a lot of fun, and I'm grateful for all of our callers and you and all of our listeners, and it's been a delight.
Truly a delight. Thank you, Michael, and
thank
everyone
you.
Go happy.
Everyone go happy. Thanks, Ashwini.
Thanks, Michael.